This is Alan Wu for TSC News Radio in Brooklyn. We're going to bring you the WWE's latest conference call, the 2018 fourth quarter earnings presentation.
I will now turn the call over to Michael Weitz, SVP Financial Planning and Investor Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Amanda, and good morning, everyone. Welcome to WWE's fourth quarter 2018 earnings call. Leading today's discussion are Vince McMahon, our chairman and CEO, as well as George Barrios and Michelle Wilson, our co-presidents. Their remarks will be followed by a Q&A session. We issued two releases earlier this morning, one pertaining to our 2018 earnings, and the second announcing a share repurchase program. These releases, our earnings presentation, other supporting materials have been posted on our website, corporate.wwe.com/investors. Today's discussion will include forward-looking statements. These forward-looking statements reflect our current views, are based on various assumptions, and are subject to risks and uncertainties disclosed in our SEC filings. Actual results may differ materially, and undue reliance should not be placed on them. Additionally, the matters we will be discussing today may include non-GAAP financial measures. Reconciliation of non-GAAP to GAAP information is set forth in our earnings release and presentation, which are available on our website. Finally, as a reminder, today's call is being recorded and the replay will be available on our website later today. At this time, it's my privilege to turn the call over to Vince.
Good morning, everyone. For the year, we achieved record revenue and profit as well, demonstrating we continue to effectively execute our strategy. In other words, we know what we're doing. Our international revenue surpassed $300 million for the first time in history, and of course, it's always been one of our goals to achieve more international revenue. We're getting there. Just a reminder, we completed our agreements with Fox and USA to provide a much more powerful platform for broadening our audience and driving growth. And it's not just that, it's also the promotion behind it, which we think will be exponential with both parties, which is going to help us not just in terms of television as an overall exposure. As you know, everything else comes behind that in terms of CPG, et cetera, et cetera. As far as we perform large-scale record-breaking events, Greatest Royal Rumble, WWE Super Showdown, which is in Australia, and actually it was like that's the largest attendees we've had for an event overseas in the past 25 years. Grew WWE Network with 8% increase in average paid subs to 1.65 million. We focused on other deepening engagement in terms of production of content, the Miz and Mrs., which is a hit television series featuring the Miz and his wife, Michelle. And we delivered an eighth season, that's remarkable, an eighth season of Total Divas, and a third season of Total Bellas. In addition to that, we also produced Evolution, which is an all-women's pay-per-view that did quite well for us. And we have Mixed Match Challenge, in which we did a second season on Facebook Watch. So generally speaking, we're pleased with our performance. We continue to transform WWE, and hopefully have another year of record-breaking results.
George? Thanks, Vince. There are several key topics which Michelle and I would like to review today. Include management discussion of our financial performance, the progress of key strategic initiatives, and our business outlook. As Vince said, in 2018, we effectively executed our strategy, leveraged our brand to increase the monetization of our content worldwide and across multiple platforms. We generated record revenues for the fifth year in a row of $930 million, with international markkets surpassing $300 million for the first time in our history. These results reflected higher content rights fees, increased advertising and sponsorship sales, and the continued growth of our direct-to-consumer WWE network. We achieved adjusted OIBDA of nearly $179 million, which is also a record that exceeded the high end of our guidance, primarily due to some cost savings and timing of certain initiatives that shifted from the fourth quarter into the current year. During the fourth quarter, our strong results reflected our ability to create captivating new content, broaden the audience, and then drive performance based on economies of scale. In the period, we produced several spectacular large-scale events, such as Crown Jewel and Super Showdown, that had a meaningful impact on our results, as evident in our media and live event segments, and accounted for a substantial share of our overall $23 million growth in adjusted OIBDA. To review our business performance in the quarter, let's turn to page 5 of the presentation, which shows revenue, operating income, and adjusted OIBDA by segment as compared to the prior year.
Looking at our media segment, adjusted OIBDA increased $22.8 million based on a 40% or a $58.9 million increase in revenue. Revenue growth was driven by the distribution of new content in international markets, as George referenced, and higher rights fees and core content agreements. The significant monetization of new content was an integral component of the quarter's other media and advertising revenue. Additionally, WWE Network added to the growth as average paid subscribers increased 7% to nearly 1.6 million and contributed to subscriber growth of 8% for the full year. The increased monetization of content reflected some important operational achievements. We produced approximately 425 hours of content, worked to optimize our future distribution, and capitalize on new opportunities to expand our audience across platforms. Extending our reach on television, we completed our 8th successful season as Total Divas, as Vince mentioned, with a 9th season planned for 2019. We also announced new seasons of both Total Bellas and Miz and Mrs., which have both rapidly gained a very loyal audience. Our streaming service, WWE Network, we expanded live in-ring content and original programming, which continued to drive viewer engagement. Among the network's most viewed programs during the quarter were international pay-per-view events, Super Showdown and Crown Jewel. Our first all-women's pay-per-view event, Evolution, as well as the newly launched weekly series, NXT UK. On social and digital platforms, consumption of WWE content continued to increase dramatically. Over the year, digital video views increased 57% to 31.4 billion, and fans watched more than 1.2 billion hours of content on those platforms. That represents a 77% increase from last year. Contributing to this growth, we produced approximately 165 hours of social and digital content, including the second season of Mixed Match Challenge on Facebook Watch. In 2018, in total, we produced more than 1,600 hours of original content across platforms, which generated consumption in the range of 6 billion hours. Over the year, we worked to diversify our talent base and establish our first performance center outside of the United States. Looking ahead, we expect to increase our production capabilities and deliver even more localized content for our international markets. We believe this will further engage and grow our global audience. Turning back to our segment performance, adjusted OIBDA from consumer products increased from the prior year quarter primarily due to a new FASB standard for revenue recognition. The adoption of that standard increased licensing revenue in the period by approximately $8 million. Excluding the impact of this change, adjusted OIBDA from the consumer products declined from the fourth quarter last year primarily due to lower sales of merchandise at our e-commerce site, WWE Shop, and lower royalties from the sale of our toy products. Despite that result, we remain the number one action figure in the United States, and the latest release of our franchise video game, WWE 2K19, earned its highest Metacritic score since 2K began producing our game back in 2013. During the quarter, we also continued to increase the penetration of our mobile games. At year-end, we had more than 100 million installs across our mobile game portfolio, which was led by WWE Champions and WWE Supercard. Also included our newest game, WWE Mayhem. Lastly, following the successful launch of WWE Custom Tees, a new component of WWE Shop, which we described last quarter, we are now planning to extend the service to our international markets, and we believe it will drive 2019 growth in e-commerce.
Going on page 8 of the presentation, revenue from live events reflected the impact of holding several large-scale international shows. WWE Super Showdown featured the most extensive roster of WWE superstars to ever appear in Australia, became the highest attended event outside the U.S. in the past 25 years, attracting more than 70,000 fans. Growth, however, was offset by the timing and performance of other events worldwide. Specifically, we staged 14 fewer events in the quarter, in part to accommodate these special events. Additionally, average attendance at our North American event declined 7% to approximately 5,000. Regarding our live events, I thought it would be helpful to provide broader context on our North American business. Turning to page 9 of the presentation, I'd like to focus on three key points. First, over the past decade, total annual attendance at our North American events and revenues from ticket sales at those events has followed a steadily increasing trend line. Second, of the 310 main roster Raw and SmackDown events in 2018, only 113 of those were events where we created video content and monetized that media through content rights fees or as part of our WWE Network subscription service. And finally, for those 113 events where we created and monetized video content, our quote-unquote TV and pay-per-view events, average attendance has generally been growing or stable. Turning back to our overall results, the significant adjusted OIBDA growth in our media segment and a one-time $11.3 million prior year charge with the adoption of the new tax act were the primary drivers of growth in net income. Additionally, fourth quarter net income benefited from a $2.5 million unrealized gain due to a mark-to-market adjustment of a marketable equity investment. You should note that as the underlying market value of this investment fluctuates, WWE is exposed to future earnings volatility to the extent we continue to hold this investment. Page 10 of our presentation shows selected elements of our capital structure. As of December 31st, 2018, WWE held approximately $360 million in cash and short-term investments. Additionally, we estimate we have approximately $100 million in debt capacity under the company's revolving credit facility. In 2018, we generated approximately $154 million in free cash flow as compared to $72 million in the prior year, with growth driven by improved operating performance. Partially offsetting this increase in free cash flow, we paid $51 million of payroll taxes associated with annual vesting of our equity awards. The scale of this amount, reflected as a financing activity in our cash flow statement, was due to the significant increase in our stock price. In terms of our capital structure, we are committed to maintaining a strong balance sheet, providing adequate liquidity for deepening our global brand moat through investments. As we look to the future, we believe that WWE will generate significant cash flow that enabled us to pursue these objectives and return excess capital to shareholders. This morning, we announced that our board of directors has authorized a stock repurchase plan of up to $500 million. The authorization of a stock repurchase program underscores our commitment to the company's shareholders. The decision was supported by WWE's strong financial performance, demonstrates our confidence in the company's future. The objectives of our capital deployment strategy are to maintain significant financial flexibility, provide adequate liquidity for investing in growth opportunities, and to return excess capital to shareholders. We plan to repurchase stock opportunistically when the price is below WWE's intrinsic value as conservatively estimated by management, and the returns of share repurchase compare favorably to other capital allocation alternatives. In our view, this should keep us on the right path toward continuing to build shareholder value. Turning to our outlook, in 2019, we expect to achieve another year of record revenue of approximately $1 billion. Previously committed, we are targeting adjusted OIBDA of at least $200 million, which would also be an all-time record. We believe that increasing the engagement of our fans over the next few years will enhance WWE's brand, and thereby strengthening our ability to optimize the value of our content. Given what we believe the potential magnitude of this opportunity is, and its importance to our long-term growth, we will continue to invest in content, digitization, and deepening our global footprint. Key areas of investment for 2019 will include our talent, developing a wider range of content, including localized content, developing the next iteration of WWE Network, and leveraging data to improve all areas of our business. In 2019, as we have in the past, we'll continue to balance current earnings growth with investments that strengthen engagement and drive long-term value. To know that net income in 2019 could be impacted by changes in the value of the marketable equity investments I mentioned. Additionally, we anticipate an effective tax rate of approximately 25% before factoring in the impact of any discrete items, including the impact of the recent share appreciation on the vesting of share-based compensation. We previously discussed a step up in capital expenditures to build out our content production infrastructure. That spending was delayed in 2018 as our workplace strategy continued to evolve. Total capital expenditures are now estimated at $70 million to $90 million for 2019, with continued spending in 2020 above the historic range of approximately 4 to 7% of revenue. And we'll provide further guidance when the related plans and timelines have been finalized. For the first quarter of 2019, we estimate adjusted OIBDA of $9 million to $14 million. This range, as well as expected performance through third quarter, represent a year-over-year decline as higher rights fees are offset by increases in fixed costs, including the timing of strategic investments. Achieving our targeted full-year 2019 results assumes a substantial revenue increase, which should generate adjusted OIBDA of at least $100 million in the fourth quarter. Importantly, our new distribution agreements in the U.S., which become effective in the fourth quarter, give us significant visibility into that expectation and into the strong year-over-year growth that we anticipate in every quarter of 2020. Additionally, we're projecting average paid subscribers to WWE Network of approximately 1.5 million for the first quarter. As you know, since the launch of WWE Network, we've issued a release and held a conference call to report network sub levels following WrestleMania. Given the success of WWE Network, we no longer believe such a call provides useful information to investors. Based on these factors, and frankly, the extremely short time period between WrestleMania and our first quarter earnings call, we don't plan on issuing a release or hosting a call the day after WrestleMania. In conclusion, in 2019, we'll continue to focus on determining our distribution strategy in various international markets, and we expect to complete this work and provide additional perspective on our plans towards the end of the first half of 2019. We'll also continue to work on developing the next iteration of WWE Network, creating new content, localized content, and continuing to leverage data and new digital products. We believe these strategic initiatives will further engage, deepen the moat around our business. Our execution in the context of the ongoing media industry trends really creates a foundation for sustainable long-term growth and increases in shareholder value.
Hi again, this is Alan Wu for TSC News Radio in Brooklyn. We wanted to tell you guys that Fred Ricciani has just come online and stated that he will be live tonight recording a podcast for TSC News on the subject of AEW and their big ticket party that's going on tonight. Maybe tonight is the big night of announcements for All Elite Wrestling. We'll also be looking to follow up on WWE Today, the big quarterly earnings conference call findings, and what we think is in store for wrestling fans everywhere. Now back to the question and answer session for the WWE conference call.
We'll take our first question from Ben Swinburne with Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. couple questions. George, could you talk a little bit about the investments you're making in 19? Any help in quantifying sort of the incremental spending that you're highlighting in the press release that you would call strategic? And should we expect that to be fairly linear through the year, since you guys obviously have a very back-end loaded EBITDA expectation? And then secondly, I guess I have to ask it since I'm the first on the call, any update on the UK process, which is now has gone beyond your at least initial suggested timeline for us to expect a result about?
Yeah, so Ben, on the first part on the investments, think about it this way. If you look at our core fixed cost base in 2018, kind of where we started the year, that tends to grow at 3 to 4% annually. So you kind of apply that. A little bit higher rate on compensation, which is frankly the biggest chunk of our cost stack. And throughout the year, and Frank, and it gets to the timing question, which I'll get to, but towards the end of the year, third quarter, and then into the fourth quarter, we began ramping up some of those strategic investments. And I'll talk a little bit about what they are, but that's when they started. So you get the full year impact in 2019. So the compares in Q1, which I talked about the decline in OIBDA, and then they softened a little bit in Q2, a little bit more in Q3, and then by Q4, the year-over-year comps actually even out, so you don't have the investment impact at this point. I'll say, you know, as we go through the year, we have a forecast we start the year with. It gets updated just about daily. So we will tune any further investments depending on what we see. So if we're moving revenue at a faster clip than we anticipate, we may put some additional investments in the fourth quarter, but all geared towards hitting that $200 million in OIBDA for the year. And as we talked about on the prepared remarks, it really is on those areas of continuing to drive content, especially the localization of our current content and potentially local content in some of our key international markets. We just think that's a big addition to the flywheel that we've built. We'll continue to invest in digital product and digitization kind of writ large, the network being one of the largest manifestations of that. And we'll continue to put more people, more kind of functional roles in our key markets, in India, in the Middle East, in China, and Latin America. So that's what we're going to do. As we said again in the prepared remarks, we think there's a long tail for us in the monetization of content, both in the U.S. And outside the U.S., and we think the opportunity is one we want to make sure we take advantage of. In terms of the rights renewal process outside the U.S., obviously there's a lot of key markets that we're still working on, U.K., India, China, Latin America, the Middle East. We'll announce those as the deals get done or shortly thereafter. We will not update the economics on any single region. What we will do is update the total core content licensing revenue that we expect, so we can see what the outcome is in total for the portfolio, but no individual market. As opposed to the announcement of, around the UK, you rightfully mentioned back in 17, we had said we thought we'd complete the UK agreement towards the back half of 18. Hasn't happened, so I think it's fair to say that all the agreements will be completed substantively by the middle of the year. And so we'll announce those as they get done. We're not going to put a specific date on any one agreement at this point.
Thank you very much.
We'll take our next question from Curry Baker with Guggenheim Securities.
Hey, thanks for the question. I have one on content. The second season of Mixed Match Challenge wrapped up in December. Can you provide us any update on the metrics you've learned from having two seasons on the Facebook Watch platform? And then there's not been a renewal for the third season. So how are you thinking about incremental content deals going forward? Does a 6 hour of content each week make sense? And if so, where are you in the process of maybe rolling out a third hour of SmackDown or anything like that?
Curry, hi, it's Michelle. On Facebook, as I mentioned on the last call, I think both seasons of Mixed Match Challenge have been a great learning experience for WWE on our side around driving viewership on the Facebook Watch platform. Again, the metrics are the same that we follow all of our content, which is time viewed. So again, we were pleased with what we learned, and we learned a lot about how to produce short form content for Facebook. They worked with us very closely in terms of how to drive our fans from our large footprint in Facebook around our talent and the WWE pages to the Watch tab. So again, I think it was a great experiment for us, and we've learned a lot. So again, I'll let George comment on kind of the sixth hour and you know what our plans are for that. But that's pretty much it on Facebook.
Yeah, Corinne, the second part of the question, just to give context, I know you know this, but for everyone on the call, so for a long time, we've created 6 hours of live event in-ring content on Mondays and Tuesdays, 2 hours of Raw, 2 hours of SmackDown, and previously ECW, NXT, main event superstars. Obviously, a few years ago, we moved to 3 hours for Raw, 2 hours for SmackDown. That sixth hour, if you will, as you referred to it, continue to be things like main event. This past year, it was 205 Live on WWE Network. It was Mixed Match Challenge, which Michelle just spoke about. So yeah, we need to look at that. Obviously, live event content is valuable. And like every piece of content, whether it's Miz and Maryse or Raw or SmackDown or NXT, we have to think about what's the best platform for that content. Is it on an AVOD platform? Is it in the paid TV bundle? Is it on a direct-to-consumer? So we're doing that evaluation now, and once we finalize that decision, we'll let everyone know.
Okay, thanks, guys.
We'll take our next question from David Karnovsky with J.P. Morgan.
Hi, thanks for taking the questions. For both your revenue and OIBDA guide in 2019, does that currently include any large international event, like Saudi Arabia or the Super Showdown? And then just to clarify, are you expecting OIB declines in each of the first three quarters or just over that period in total?
Yeah, so on the first one, as you know, we announced a 10-year deal to do a major event in the Middle East. So that's in there. I'm not going to comment on any other events that are kind of in our forecast. We don't get into that level of granular detail. And what it gets to Ben's question, your second part, David, is the investment element and the timing of that is most pronounced in the first quarter, a little bit less in the second quarter, but probably declines there as well. And then similarly, by the third quarter, it begins to abate somewhat, but potentially kind of flat to down in the third quarter as well. And then the fourth quarter will be a significant increase as the U.S. rights deal comes into play, and at this point we're expecting at least $100 million of adjusted OIBDA in that quarter.
Okay. And then you mentioned investing in your talent base in 2019. We've seen in recent months a new wrestling promotion announced. Just wondering how this is potentially impacting the market for talent, and you know whether you're seeing more cost inflation there than normal. Thanks.
Yeah, too early to tell. You know, we wouldn't talk about the specifics of that. You know, from our perspective, you know, we think we are the premier global organization, and the greatest wrestlers in the world want to be in the greatest platform. So we have a lot of confidence in our ability to manage that.
Okay, thanks.
We'll take our next question from Brandon Ross with BTIG.
Hi, thanks for taking the questions. You have content deals in progress that I believe will impact 2019, including China and Mexico, I think. How are these embedded in your 2019 guide, and what progress has been made there? And then on the China market, what specifically are you seeing there? How's your progress and popularity changed since the last TV deal that you cut there? Thanks.
Sure. So, yes, you're right. There's some deals that expire during the year, so the outcome of those will impact 19. As far as what's embedded in the guide is our best estimates of where those deals will turn out. Obviously, in some, we have better visibility than others just because of the timing of the discussions. But in all, we have some level of visibility at this point. So the conversations continue. They're frankly not that dissimilar market by market. A little bit kind of where you are on the conversation might differ just because of the timing. But otherwise, everything continues apace, and a lot of visas and so on in everyone's passport, so which is a good thing. And then Michelle can touch on.
On China, as a reminder to everyone, our content is distributed there on it with a digital-first strategy with PP Sport. And again, we've seen consumption of both Raw and SmackDown, and again, what's great about that partnership, we are delivering Raw and SmackDown Live in Mandarin. And so that has obviously been great to driving our viewership and our fan base in that market. So consumption on Raw and SmackDown continues to grow well in that market. We're pleased with the growth. Again, what's nice about digital and social is you can grow that pretty quickly. As most of you know, we've had a strategy where we put some social media content producers on the ground in that market. That's also grown our social media footprint significantly. As George mentioned, one of our primary focuses is putting investments into the market, and China is one of them, where we can do more localized content. That means, you know, highlights and clips and how we tell the story of Raw and SmackDown on social platforms being in Mandarin. And right now we are just scratching the surface of that. We believe long-term that will continue to grow our fan base in China. So again, we're happy with the growth, and we expect it to continue as we engage our fans deeper with localized content.
Thank you.
We'll take our next question from Eric Handler with MKM Partners.
Thank you very much, and good morning. Two questions for you. First, George, a bit of a modeling question. When you look at these investments, particularly what we're going to see in the first quarter, is that going to impact more the media division line? Is that going to impact more on the corporate line? Where are we going to see these investments show up?
Yeah, you'll see more on the media side. As well as you know, we allocate some of the our costs as well back to the segments, costs that we feel appropriately belong in the segments because they're closer to the end customer. So some of those costs as well. But yeah, primarily just because of the scale of the media business, they'll be predominantly there.
Okay. And then a question for Paul, if he's there, if he's not, whoever chooses. The other day, thanks to the magical power of the internet, there was a picture of Paul making a presentation, and behind him was a map of the world and forward-looking thinking about where future performance centers can go. And you had one in Latin America and Asia and, you know, five different places, I think it was. How close are we to, I know you just opened up the UK center, but as you think about more localization of product, how close are we to actually seeing these performance centers start getting opened in various other regions?
Yeah, and I think to give it a little bit broader context, Vince in a discussion the other day said something I thought was really impactful, and that is that, you know, in the next 5 to 10 years, our ability to develop local content could be as valuable as the Western content that we today export, you know, Raw and SmackDown. So when we talk about this performance center strategy, academy strategy globally, you know, it has multiple points. It has, number one, it gives us a greater pipeline of talent. Number two, it allows us in the short term to monetize. And then number three, it gets to that longer term vision that Vince mentioned. So for us, the question is how and when. And you saw the UK was, I would describe, on kind of on a light scale. If Orlando is the heavy scale, replicating that, UK is more on the light scale, and that's the beginning. So we'll see over time because we're going to learn. I think that's one of the things. Culturally, the organization does really well. It starts off small, it learns, it goes quicker and quicker and quicker, and before you know it, you've got this huge overnight success. So that'll be the approach we take with the PC model. I saw that picture of Paul too. He looked damn good on that.
And then just one last follow-up, if I could, with the share buyback, I'm just curious of what drove your decision to do a buyback rather than, let's say, increase the dividend at this time.
Yeah. So obviously the first question was, what do we see in terms of free cash flow? And we have today a lot of confidence in that over the next several years. And then we evaluated a variety of models, and we just thought that the ability to balance maintaining the strength of the balance sheet and giving us the flexibility around that, reacting to new assumptions that we'll have both about the external environment and our own internal operations, we just thought the authorizing a buyback program just gave us a lot more flexibility.
Great. Thank you.
We'll take our next question from Vasily Karasyov with Cannonball Research.
Thank you. Good morning. I have a couple. George, you just mentioned your confidence in free cash flow generation. I think this year your EBITDA to free cash flow conversion was around 90%, and that's up from 53% last year. Can you tell us what kind of level we should expect, you know, in the next 3 years? What's the right kind of assumption? And then I have a question on advertising and sponsorship.
Yeah, I'm going to stay away from your question on free cash flow conversion. I think there are some things we need to lock down before we can comment on that. We do want to get the international renewals completed. We want to have a little bit more visibility on our workplace strategy, the timing of that. So we'll stay away from that. I also will say we have, when you look at our cash flow annually, there are timing elements around that. I tend to myself look at a 2 or 3 year average to smooth out, especially the working capital changes, but we're not going to peg a specific conversion number at this point for the reasons I mentioned.
Okay. The second question is about advertising and sponsorship revenue accelerating in Q4 and for the full year in the media segment. So my question is, should we expect this lumpiness in terms of growth rates in 19 to continue? And then would it be fair to assume that the incremental margin for this revenue stream is close to like 85-90%? Thank you.
So two things. It's lumpy by the nature, so we're not going to get into quarter over quarter guide. And then on the margin, it depends on a lot of this is our digital assets are part of that, and within that specifically our relationship with YouTube. And so the way we record the revenue and attendant COGS depends on whether the it's sold by us or sold by them. So I don't want to get into all the mechanics of that. I think it's fair to say it's very, very profitable revenue. The 80-90%, though, I wouldn't say it's at that level, again, because of this mix issue.
Thank you.
We'll take our next question from Eric Katz with Wolfe Research.
Thanks. Good morning, all. Nice to see a stock up in this tape, so well done. You've been able to find a number of incremental opportunities over the last few years, whether Saudi Arabia, Facebook, or new TV shows. Is there anything you can tell us about potentially new opportunities or areas of interest you're looking into for 19 and beyond? And sort of in that vein, any thoughts on putting some NXT content on Fox?
Yeah, so on the first part, I think Vince mentioned on the last call, that, again, it gets to the culture of the company, this kind of continuous reimagination of itself. And you know, we have a pretty robust process, Eric, of evaluating both organic and inorganic opportunities. I was just reading one with Michelle earlier this morning. So, yeah, there is a lot in the pipeline. I'm not going to talk about what those are, but I will say it's really rigorous. We've got a real focus on return profile. Now, in some cases, that return is over multiple years because our ability to monetize content, for example, might be driven by contractual agreements. But I will say it's a really rigorous process around what the return threshold is on the investments. You had another one.
With regard to potentially putting NXT on Fox.
Right. Yeah, look, I think we talked about it a little bit earlier. The main thing, and it's a there's two big changes that have really happened over the last 10 years. Number one, WWE has become predominantly a media company. And over 70% of its revenue in 2018 was from media, as opposed to from tickets or products. So that's a fundamental shift in the last 10 years. And that percentage will probably grow as we hit the fourth quarter this year and in 2020. That's the business model is almost inverted. The second thing along that is the monetization of the media now comes across multiple platforms. 10 years ago, what was being monetized was really one choice, and usually you were dealing with a limited partner set. Today we have multiple platforms, some of which we control ourselves. So the question we have for everything, including NXT, is what is the best place for that content? And you take the prism of our fans, where are our fans consuming? What piece of content is tailored to which part of our fan group? Because everyone has different appetites for different things. And then obviously monetization, both direct monetization and indirect, the promotional element. So all of that goes into, those are the prisms we look at. And so NXT is no different. We have the same discussions. And sometimes they, you know, there's constructive debate internally around that, because it's not an easy call. So it's a long way.
Do you happen to know?
We're open to everything.
Yeah, just. It's just on that. Do you know what the awareness is of NXT content beyond those who are on the network?
Yeah, well, if you think about the building of that brand, and it's the second most, you know, if you think of WWE Network as a bundle of content, so you're always thinking about what's the incremental value of any unit in a bundle. It's the second, in our view, it's the second most valuable unit in our bundle behind the pay-per-view. So it has a significant value there for us. And if you look at when we do a takeover, it's trending globally. Right?
We just did. And for those of you who were watching the Super Bowl and following social media simultaneously, you know the interest of NXT is significant on the social media following. So we, Paul and his team, did Halftime Heat, which was brought back from 20 years ago, which took place in NXT match during the halftime Super Bowl, and it trended worldwide and beat out a lot of the top advertisers trending. At the same time. So when you talk about awareness, when you can drive global trends during Super Bowl around NXT as a brand, I think that speaks volumes to the awareness of that brand. So again, you know, those social metrics tend to be a very good indicator around awareness. And again, trending worldwide is not an easy thing to accomplish on Super Bowl Sunday.
Certainly better than the halftime show. Thanks, guys.
We'll take our next question from Laura Martin with Needham.
Hi there. I'd love to see if we could get Vincent on the act. So, Vince, we've had a stable SVOD environment for the last couple of years while you guys have grown the WWE Network. And now in this year, we're going to get AT&T, Disney, NBC, lots of SVOD new entrants, as well as a lot of AVOD new entrants. And I'm interested in your point of view about how many SVOD services do you think the average household is going to take, and whether you think these new competitors, big competitors with a lot of marketing dollars and free avails sitting behind them, are going to affect the OTT growth and your viewing generally.
Well, first of all, there's nothing in the world like WWE. Whether it's Disney, they have, you know, what their platforms, and whether or not that works, we hope all of this works. But nonetheless, there, you know, this is, it's not really a niche type situation, but it's a very unique form of program. You can't get it anywhere else. And that's, you know, really a tremendous advantage that we have over everything else. And again, the nimble nature of what we can do as an extension of all of this. So we can fit in. We can fit into a bundle. We can fit into just our network. There's so many ramifications of this, Laura, that we can be a part of a number of things. We can be separate, combination of all of the above. You know, I think that we fit in very well in terms of who we are and the unique nature of our product and the demand for it. So I think it's a plus. Not in terms of, you know, being an island. An island is good in this respect.
Laura, did you,
okay.
I would say, Laura, the other thing I would add to that, we've had a lot of discussions around these other streaming services, and you know, we were at this since 2014, and I think our value proposition has continued to be very strong. We survey our subscribers regularly. And we constantly hear the value that we deliver in the content that we're putting out. You know, as George mentioned, the next iteration of WWE Network, we're doing that for a reason and making that investment to ensure that we continue to deliver a great product, the best user experience, and great content. So we feel good about our streaming service relative to the other choices that consumers have.
Okay. Ronda Rousey again, Vince, I don't know if you're willing to, this is a little maybe controversial for you, but Ronda Rousey was an experiment. She built her brand on a different platform. She brought it with her to WWE. I see that you put the Evolution ad, which is awesome, on the Financial Outlook page, which is the Wall Street Keep page. And I'm just wondering, if she leaves, under this hypothetical question, let's say Ronda Rousey leaves the WWE, does that damage the WWE franchise, and does that make the experiment a worthy experiment to bring in people from that have built brands elsewhere to the WWE when they may, in fact, then exit and hurt the WWE brand? I'm curious as to that experiment and your learnings from this Ronda Rousey experiment.
Well, again, we can bring people up from the outside into our environment. It can't be just a one-off type thing, because then our audience realizes that, you know, that's not going to, you know, push the envelope as well as far as their enjoyment of what we do. But nonetheless, bringing Ronda in gave us more visibility in terms of the initiative of reaching more women. And when you do something like that, it allows you to not just use Ronda's platform from a different nature to come into WWE. Ronda in of herself becomes a brand of WWE. It's a different Ronda than what you saw before in terms of UFC and things of that nature. So, and when you put talent, rub talent, so to speak, up against Ronda, Ronda can help us make talent, and she is she's doing just that, and she knows how to do it. She's one of the brightest people we've ever done business with, and the fact that she is adapted to the WWE culture so fast, it really is truly an amazing salute to her as an athlete and as a human being. So the Rondas will come in and out, and when they do, you know, as long as we know what those dates are, you plan around it. The unfortunate aspect of sometimes in our business is that we, you know, our performers are not cartoons, and they get hurt. And this year, you know, leading up to where we are now, we've had an inordinate number of injuries. And when you have injuries, and again, there's a whole bunch of the Roman Reigns being a principal among them, and even John Cena, not an injury type thing, but we thought we're going to have John more over a part of our programming than we do. You know, John, God bless him, is making more movies. And even John, I would think, would say, geez, you know, I thought I was going to spend more time with what I love to do, which is WWE. He's only been coming in and out, so he's not really a part of our storyline. So you lose John, you lose Roman Reigns. In addition to that, we've had injuries. Sasha Banks, you know, Becky Lynch, you know, who's one of our top female performers, was injured. Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Bray Wyatt, Charlotte Flair, Alexa Bliss, Braun Strowman, Dean Ambrose, Ember Moon, Samoa Joe, Occam from a new tag team, Jason Jordan, Fandango, Big Show, Seth Rollins. You know, it's like you've had all these injuries, which is really unusual for us. And their characters, it's no different than if you were writing a soap opera and all of a sudden your main character wasn't there. You're in the middle of production. What do you do? Well, you very nimbly change, you know, the storyline. But it's not as good as the original one. Sometimes it's better because we're pretty good at it. But those are the things that that we're faced with, and one of the reasons why television ratings have dropped, and one of the reasons, obviously, you know, from a live event standpoint, that's dropped too, because if you don't have your favorites on television, obviously you can't see them at a live event either. So we're wide open. Ronda's done an extraordinary job. There'll be other individuals coming from different areas that will join us on a long-term basis that will help us as well.
And that answers my third question, too, which was about the attendance drop. It sounds like some of these injuries have hurt the storylines and the content so that it's not secular. You think next year, if everybody's healthy, it sounds like you think attendance might kick back up again.
Right.
Okay. Thanks very much. Very helpful. Thank you.
As a reminder, it is star one to ask a question. We will take our next question from Evan Wingreen with KeyBanc Capital Markets.
Thanks. Just a quick one on subs. The growth that you're guiding to for the first quarter implies a bit of a deceleration. Is that something that you're seeing in the numbers from Royal Rumble? And just sort of wondering if you could give a bit of color on kind of what you're seeing in terms of gross adds and churns at a high level kind of interquarter. Thanks.
Sure. I mean, first, for the specific, obviously, is context. WWE Network is one of the most powerful engagement mechanisms we have with our most passionate fans. It's also our second largest revenue stream, incredibly profitable, so we're all thrilled with the performance. I'll tell you, Evan, we don't really worry about quarter to quarter that much. We've been in the subscription business now long enough. We understand that there are some quarters will be worse than others, and it's really about the long term on the platform. So, and we're not going to comment on kind of specific events, obviously.
Makes sense. Thanks.
We'll take our last question from Alan Gold with Loop Capital.
Thank you for taking the question. Two questions, please. In the release, you talk about the next iteration of the WWE Network service. Can you give us a little? Can you give us a little more detail on that? Is it going to be a service with more live events at a higher price? And secondly, with respect to CapEx, you said you've delayed plans, but it's still $70 to $90 million, which is a multiple of what it was this year. Could you explain that a little bit?
Sure. We're not going to get into too much detail on the service. We've got a big reveal plan, but what, you know, we've talked about that there's, you know, three things that we think we can do. And first of all, it's an award-winning service right now, right? It's the second largest sports SVOD service in the world. It's won multiple awards on usability and functionality. Our fans love it, so we're thrilled, but we know we can do better. I think we can do better in three ways. Number one, we can integrate what is a treasure trove of free video into the service. It exists today on multiple platforms, but we think we can do something pretty wonderful with that. Number two, we think we can create an opportunity where when you are connecting with us across any one of our digital businesses, we can bring that all together for you, as opposed to today, you've got kind of separate touch points. And then number three, you know, today, while the service is available around the world, it's only in English, and we think there's an opportunity to go deeper in some local markets. So that won't all happen at once. You'll start seeing it roll out sometime this year, and it'll come in phases. But that's really what the next iteration, and we're really excited to share it with folks here in the near future. On the CapEx, yeah, we talked about the timing because earlier in 18, we guided towards, you know, our historical percent of revenue on CapEx has been 4 to 7%. We said 18, we expected it to be beyond that, and it wasn't, to your point. So that was the delay into 19. So we'll be a little bit more specific on the exact plans, but as we've said for now 18 months, as the company has grown and as it sees the opportunities into the future, our workplace strategy needs to reflect that. So we're kind of putting the final crossing T's and dotting I's on that. But that's what's driving the timing referred to 18 into 19.
Once again, this is Alan Wu for TSC News Radio in Brooklyn. We wanted to remind you once again, Fred Ricciani is coming on live tonight, February 7th, Thursday, to discuss All Elite Wrestling and what is going to go down at the AEW ticket party. If there's any big news, we are going to discuss it, and we'll like to discuss it with you. So comment back and set your notifications on youtube.com/thesportscourier and facebook.com/thesportscourier. Search for TSC News right there and then. And check out Fred's video from the Action Martial Arts Hall of Fame. His Sports Courier podcast number 10 is already on YouTube. Fred got an interview with gold medal winning boxer Ray Mercer and Vincent Pastore from The Sopranos. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon. I'm Alan Wu. This has been a TSC News Radio special report.